Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers. I think we should do introductions at the start. There's four of us online now, which is quite exciting. So my name's Thomas WP, a part-time A-level only teacher of physics, and I'm joined by Patrick Caplow, who is in Windham, New Hampshire, Dan Toomey in Dublin, and Robin Griffiths.
Yeah, hi Thomas, it's good to hear, and welcome Dan, it's really great to have you on after quite a lot of organisation to get you here.
Yeah, it's great to be on, thanks for having me.
Just stretching across the world, so we've got Dublin, we've got Essex, we've got New Hampshire. This is fantastic, loads of us here.
Yeah, welcome Dan. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, what sort of school you work in and how it's going? How many physics teachers in your department, that sort of thing?
So my name's Dan Toomey and I've only recently moved back to Ireland. So I'm teaching in an all-girls secondary school in Dublin, where I am the only physics teacher, unfortunately. And numbers for physics are quite good, but I'm now in a situation where I'm working with no other physics specialist and no technician either. So I am my own technician.
Wow.
Big change.
Is that an Ireland thing, no technician, or is that a school thing?
No, it's an Ireland thing.
Same as Patrick. Patrick has no technicians.
Yeah, we're so lucky here.
Yeah, we really are. We do need to get a technician on, don't we? So if you are a technician and want to come on the podcast, please contact us. Contact at thephysicsteachingpodcast.com. And speaking of technicians, that also reminds me of what you wanted to talk about this week, Robin. Over to you.
It is that time of year when open evening looms. And you always have this thing of, you know, the head teacher comes around and everybody bows and scrapes and puts their foreheads to the floor and says, great head teacher. And they say, I want something engaging that's going to attract huge numbers of students to my school. And then the cold sweat breaks out. So has anybody got any tips, tricks, things that they do at open evenings, things just to demonstrate physics to get the kids excited? Dan, I don't know, do they do open evenings in Ireland? Is that something that's done?
Yeah, we have open evenings and you have to do all the bells and whistles that go with it. Open evenings, I think, are easy. Best to do the simple things. So I like collapsing can, get a few students to do that. That's always a nice one.
For the benefit, because I know there's a lot of people here who you know, aren't even physics teachers who will be asked to do open evenings. So can you just describe what that is?
Oh, yeah. So an empty drinks can, Coke can size works best. A small amount of water in the bottom, enough that you can feel it slosh around. You heat it over a Bunsen burner flame. And then once there's quite a lot of steam coming out the top, you turn it upside down into a trough of water and the atmospheric pressure should collapse the can. Well,
lovely.
That's what should happen. And it usually works quite nicely.
Can I ask what you hold it with? Because I was at a school once where we were holding it with the clamps from clamp stands and they all had cork on. A lot of smoke.
Yeah, I have done it with that, but not with cork. But usually just a pair of tongs does quite nicely. The longer, the better. And I think once I tried it with the test tube holders, but I couldn't get a good enough grip on it and it kept slipping out.
Yeah, I always love the opening when you do these things and the parents are even more wowed than the kids. That's always quite fun. And that's just got that wow factor, hasn't it?
It does. It goes bang. And then it's also nice and easy equipment-wise. For the week or 2 weeks before, you put a notes up in the staff room, you end up with quite a lot of Coke cans.
Yes, absolutely. Red Bull, Monster, that kind of thing. Yeah, any type of energy drink. Yeah, it works.
Exactly.
Yeah. And of course, the physics behind that is just fantastic. And it's so instantaneous, isn't it? I mean, the collapse is almost instantaneous. You get the sense of the savageness of atmospheric pressure, because it's a heck of a pressure, actually, when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
It's really good.
So, Patrick, what about over in New Hampshire? How do you wow the kids?
Well, it's interesting. We, first of all, call it open house. Mm-hmm. And the format, I'm interested to hear about the format in the UK and in Ireland, because in the United States, open house involves just parents. It's in the evening, usually from about maybe 6 to 8 p.m. And the parents kind of track the student's schedule walking throughout the building, going to the different classrooms. And you don't really get to spend much time with the parents, usually about maybe 10 minutes per group that comes through. So, you know, the idea of doing demonstrations is fairly limited by that constraint.
Well, in open evenings I've been to, everyone comes, the mums, the dads, the grandparents, the children, the younger brothers and sisters. Every classroom in science will have a biology, physics, chemistry, and we'll all put on a show. I mean, certainly in physics, the Van de Graaff is brought out and shown off, and
they may see that once or twice in the whole time in school. So it's a real putting on a show event for me. I don't know about you, Dan.
Oh, yeah, Van de Graaff comes out. And anything that makes a noise or sparks or anything to show off how fun science is and then give a completely unrealistic idea of what you do day to day in a classroom. But it is a great way to get, I think, especially kids coming in from primary school who maybe haven't seen that much science, to see what could be done in a science lab and could be done in a physics classroom. It is a once in a year time to show off. So I do quite enjoy it.
I felt you were going to list a lot of things you were going to do before we started going off on the collapsing can, Dan. So did you have anything else you wanted to mention?
So what else? Yeah, Van de Graaff. And it's usually, if you can get the Van de Graaff, and you know you can get the air-thing sphere that goes with it, if you can get a helium balloon, normally you can get it to go tick-tock between the two. That's quite a nice one to set up.
Mm, that's nice. I've not heard that.
If you get some magnets, if you can get the small neodymium ones, they're best. But if you put them in a clamp stand, a wooden clamp stand works best, you can get some paper clips on fishing line to stand up and attract. So the fishing line is taut, but it looks like a paper clip isn't attached to anything.
A floating paper clip is one of the ones I was going to mention.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm trying to think what else. I have a list somewhere. Vacuum cannons making an appearance this year, definitely.
I should hope so too. The physics teaching podcast branded vacuum cannon, would that be, Dan?
Yes, it is. Nice big sticker on the side.
Available at all good retail outlets in time for Christmas. Yeah. So, and Thomas, I mean, you know, you've mentioned a couple there and a couple of things. The Van de Graaff comes out. I tend to use a lot of sound demos. It's funny that even the most basic of sound demos seem to have a lot of traction with the kids. I don't know. Do you use any of those?
Not sound. I usually break it down into two things. Things to entertain the kids so the parents can talk to you, because the parents do want to talk to you. So for that, I'd have the floating paperclip with a few things to put in the gap to see if they can make it fall, and that when they find the magnetic materials. I usually set up a circuit under a tray with the just light bulbs on top and the switch, and like the switch will turn all the light bulbs on in a parallel circuit. And then I say, can you make this circuit without seeing what I've done, because it's all hidden under the box? So that keeps the kids occupied. And there's always one or two kids who actually get stuck into that. And then there's the showpiece things. So if people look at episode zero, I really enjoyed that last year with doing the spaceman in a vacuum with the Tunnock tea cake helmet. Because there's some good questions about that. Now, will the Tunnock tea cake end up smaller or larger or the same size as when you started? And that's just interesting science. But I really like the egg into a conical flask. You'll remember that rubbing, because Andy used to be a real showman with that when we worked together. So that, you have a conical flask where you choose it so the diameter of the neck is reasonably smaller than the diameter of a hard-boiled egg. And then you put the egg on top, and it obviously doesn't go through. But if you heat the conical flask and then put the egg on, air pressure will push it through, especially if you secretly put a smear of water, like a little few drops of water inside. You heat it up, wait till it's hot, put the egg on, and then as the water condenses, the air pressure will push in the egg. And you Vaseline the neck, don't you, for that? That's a really nice, simple, but hugely impressive demo.
So, Patrick, any others that you use that wow the punters?
Well, I'm listening to you describe Open Evening, and we have such a short time frame. Literally like 8 to 10 minutes with each group of parents that comes through, that there's not only no time for that, but I think the purpose is just to introduce yourself to the parents. The students don't come, and I think the parents just want to get a read on the students. Now, I've been to, you know, open evenings as a parent, and I think really what you're doing is just kind of getting a feel for who their teachers are, so that when they discuss them at the dinner table, you kind of know, you can, you know, put somebody with the name. And then, you know, maybe this is unfair, but you get a read on the parent or on the teachers, right? Like, so, you know who the hard and fast rule followers are, and you know who your student might feel is a little more comfortable to be around. And so you're just kind of getting a feel for that. I think that's actually just the purpose.
But is there nothing on your year agenda where you get to put in a show and show stuff? I mean, we've all seen films, haven't we, Robin? Science fairs.
You guys love the American Science Fair. I think you should. I think I might bring one up, resurrect it just for you two.
Yeah. Nearly every film about kids in America that involves science fiction is something goes wrong at a science fair, surely.
Yeah, it kind of used to be a big thing. I don't think it is anymore, but that doesn't mean it's not done.
So disappointing.
Yeah, so just for some background here, Dan, you recognize that Thomas and I have absolutely no idea of what happens in America, apart from the really lowbrow American TV that we watch, basically. That's all we've
and
got.
The movie Breakfast Club, that is a documentary, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, and yeah, it is.
What was that other one? Was it Weird Science? That you know, obviously, clearly that's what American Science Labs are like. Shall we bring it back around? But it's really interesting, actually. What the conversation has shown, actually, is how important it is. And it's one thing I'd always thought of open evenings of doing engaging things for the kids and sort of zeroed in on that. But it is important to give the parents that chance to talk to you. And this is clearly paramount in open house in America. But it's something I hadn't really considered here, that perhaps when planning a parent open evening, that we should think about how to allow the kids some time to explore something so you can have a chat with the parents on a more serious level.
I usually find the parents want to talk to us. So what do you think, Dan?
Yeah, so my experience is that the open evening is mostly for the kids to come in and see and the parents to get the tour of the school. Then later in the year, there would be the A-level open evening, and that's usually when I find that parents want to stop and talk and get to know you as a teacher more so than just seeing what's going on for the A-level when we wouldn't put on any form of open evening or, you know, display events. Open evening is usually just so hectic that you don't get the chance to speak to parents.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's just that frenetic thing. There's a huge number of people come through. That's what we find over here as well. So it sounds like, you know, in some ways, you know, Patrick, I guess that structure, even though you have a very short time, at least you do have that ability to engage with parents, albeit for a short time, and to talk to them about things, and that's quite valuable. So I guess it's something to bear in mind when you're planning your open evening, when teachers who are listening and planning their open evenings. Hopefully we give you some tips. We've got some collapsing cans, get your Van de Graaff generator out, do some demos like that. Those are always very engaging for the kids. But if you can, you know, try and make some eye contact with the parents and just reassure them that their kids are going to enjoy the science in your lesson.
I have one thing to add, and that's our sixth form one is very like Dan's in that we don't really put out much, but moment silent, because it was a tidying up sixth form parents' evening where we lost our electron diffraction tube.
Oh.
Dropped.
Oh.
No, tragedy dropped in the tidying up. Just a tragedy. Very expensive tragedy. Miss it. Loved that piece of kit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not easy to replace.
No, not at all.
No, they're expensive pieces of kit. No, that's a shame. Maybe we should we'd have to sell quite a few vacuum cannons to get that back for you.
Or if anyone listening works in a merged school where you've got two, just get in touch.
Mm. Yeah. I think you're clutching at straws there.
Yeah. Name your price.
Right, Patrick, you have to go off to a meeting, don't you? So I think we should probably, it's a good time to stop, isn't it, and wish you farewell.
Well, thank you for including me. I really enjoyed the chat with you fellas, and Dan, it was nice to meet you via Skype.
Great to speak to you.
Take care, right, Patrick. We'll see you soon.
All right. Bye. Bye.
So one of the reasons we got Dan on was to talk about what Charlie can do. I don't know what we should call this spot. Maybe we should call it, What Should Charlie Do?
Yeah. That sounds good.
So we're on Audio Diary 3, which is made up of a chat I have with him using our new Zoom device, and an audio diary he sent to me just before we sat down to record. So Charlie, you've just done the first lesson of Forces. How did it go?
Yeah, it was excellent, thank you. Nice to see the kids engaged, ready. Got a few practicals going on. So we had a nice pendulum. We had a newton meter with a weight. We had a duck floating on a bucket of water, which they particularly like the duck. And introduced it with the use of the Force spectacles. So we used the car as an example, and they all got a picture of a car to stick in their book, and then some Force arrows, which the more able were able to draw on, but I'd also printed some off for them to be able to have a look and try and get them the right way around and in the right place. But certainly they had a basic understanding. They knew about the push and the pull and the twist, and they knew that they worked in pairs. But beyond that, it was pretty limited in terms of their prior knowledge. So I certainly think we pitched it at the right place.
Yeah, that twist has been discredited by one of our listeners who pointed out a twist is a torque, not a force. So we have done a corrections corner, I think we'd call that, wouldn't we? Corrections corner. You said you enjoyed going around the little groups.
Yeah, it was, even though it was only sort of 10, 15 minutes, it was great for them to have the opportunity to get up, move around the classroom and start pushing and pulling things and having a go with them. The ping pong balls, where they had to blow them with the straws, were particularly good. And what was nice is that I managed to find a cork board just to let them blow it on, so really it wouldn't fly across the classroom. But then they moved it to the table as well and saw a difference in terms of, obviously, the speed. So they could then start talking about friction and how that force affected with the different surfaces, to the smooth, to the rough, etc. So it was lovely to see them starting to develop their investigations and really starting to think a little bit more about, well, why is this happening?
Hi, Charlie here. Just found out that my Year 7 science class will not be bringing in their books, of which I'd started their work on forces, and indeed would have no equipment with them tomorrow because they're doing a colour run, something to do with physical education. I don't know what those PE teachers are all about.
So what can Charlie do? He's doing forces. We've got the scheme of work in front of us, and the kind of headings of the lessons are introduction to forces, which he's done, squashing and stretching, which is kind of Hooke's law, drag forces and friction, forces at a distance, and balanced and unbalanced forces. So what can Charlie do if they don't have the exercise books? Dan?
The natural thing, the one that I would have gone for, would have been into friction, because that's quite nice. You could set up another circus of activities. You know, where you've got one object that you can drag across the different surfaces with Newton meter and take readings of friction, not something that they necessarily need books for. And they could get, even just as a class, set of results and get some averages on the board to see the different surfaces.
Yeah, that's a nice suggestion, actually. Just gather the data on the board and analyze it as a class, you say. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, so one thing I like with circuses as well is just to give them a kind of... The basis of a kind of cartoon strip almost, so that if there's eight stations in the circus, that they've got eight boxes, and I ask them to represent that, to write a sentence and draw something about each of the stations that they visited, so that they can at least have something. And then okay, that's on a piece of paper, which then maybe they can stick in later, but it's something they can take around with them, and you can see quite readily who's working, who's not, things like that. So I love the circuses, and I've sort of added to them with a little bit of a kind of a cartoon matrix to work in.
I used to call them circus, but I now call them carousel. I'm sure carousel's a better word.
Okay.
Does anyone out there call it carousel? Who knows? Carousel goes round, doesn't it? A circus is like a tent.
We'll have a huge ruck about the word carousel versus circus. See, this is what happens. You see, Dan, when you hear it and it's all been edited, it sounds great, doesn't it?
Yeah, you don't get any of this.
Yeah, you don't get any of this. Like, I wonder what happens if you blow up a puppy. We do all of those.
Perhaps we should have a vote on Twitter, carousel or circus.
Circus. Everybody.
I thought, when I was looking at this, maybe he could do Hooke's law, because you could have it all set up and give them a sheet of graph paper and then get them to draw the results at the top of the graph paper, and then make the lesson about how do we draw a graph at the bottom of the paper. Because we've got an hour lesson, and these are year sevens, and it'd be good to teach them how to draw a graph. And then it occurred to me, I'd probably have to show Charlie what we mean by a graph for that. I suspect I'd have standards about a graph that Charlie would not be aware of.
Yeah, I have my golden rules for great graphs that I stick by, especially with year sevens. As soon as they come in, and we got the basics of pencil, ruler, label, axes, title, but then more intricate of where the independent and dependent variables go, how big the graph should be, so more than half a page, the intervals that it needs to go up in.
1, 2, 4, 5, 10.
Yeah, no threes, sixes, or nines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that could be quite good to do Hooke's law and then base it on a graphing lesson where they could check against whatever set of rules or prescriptors that he has for drawing a great graph.
Yeah, I don't think our department has a kind of standard for that, but it might be nice to talk to him about that. That's interesting. It's probably a bit late. I will be sending him this conversation tonight for him to listen to in time for tomorrow. And he's deputy head. He can get wherever he wants at short notice. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that, I think those are both very good suggestions. So I will pass them on to him, and then we will hear back for his audio diary next week. And hopefully we can stay one week ahead. Because always we always record the podcast, don't we, Robin, a week before it comes out.
Yes. Yes, we're about a week ahead, aren't we? And that's the way it works. Yes, it's an interesting and thorny problem of you know, so what do you do when you've got no access to books? And I think, you know, you could almost do a whole podcast episode on that. And the other one, of course, which is what you do when the IT's broken, because most people this happened this morning. We went into school and no internet at all, and everybody was panicking and running around like goodness knows what. And of course, these days when the network's down, no printers, no worksheets, no nothing.
No YouTube, no PowerPoint.
Well, this is it. So what do you do when it's just you and a board pen? You know, that could be another whole episode.
But
I think
if you're old gets like me, that's just another day. I think I was thinking it'd be interesting to do one on drawing a graph. I mean, a whole podcast on drawing a graph. I could easily do half an hour on drawing a graph.
To be honest, you can do an hour on whether a carousel's better than a circus. So let's face it, that's probably fine. But I'm not sure how
it's semantics, isn't it? I mean, they both mean the same thing. But just in my mind, carousel means something going round.
That's a good t-shirt. That should be the next t-shirt.
Carousel or circus. That will have to go in the podcast now. Oh dear. So I think we've covered the ground we wanted to cover today: open evenings and help for Charlie. I'm trying to think of other things I've done at open evenings. I think the vacuum cannon is a winner for open evening. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's one of those things that the head of science, particularly if they're not a physicist, might get cheesed off with the huge explosions going on in the back every time. But nonetheless, yes, exactly, yeah, but it should be fine.
Ah, see, my head of department's a physicist now, isn't he? So he won't mind.
Yeah, he'll be fine with it. So one thing I was just going to say before we leave this topic of open evenings, of course, that if you do have any suggestions for fantastic ideas for open evening, please do tweet them. We've got getting close to 900 followers on Twitter now. So there's a lot of people who potentially can share some ideas and share some tips and tricks for that. And if you can take a quick picture of it, even better.
Yes, I actually did tweet that out in response to someone asking the podcast Twitter feed, do you have any ideas for open evening? But I have a suspicion that about 10:35 on a Tuesday morning is not when many teachers are on Twitter. So that wouldn't apply to it at all. Can't think what they're doing.
Yeah, no idea. These people. It's probably just having another one of their long holidays and knocking off at 4 o'clock. You know how it is. Yeah.
Long holidays. Oh dear. So Dan, we have this spot on the show you may be aware of, Practical In Memoriam.
Yeah.
Is there any practical or demo you particularly like that you would like to share?
Talk about putting me on the spot. There's one A-level one I like. It's one of the assessed practicals. It's finding Planck's constant with LEDs. So we had made a strip of 5 different color LEDs, and you can get the wavelength from the manufacturer. So we put that on a sticker on the back. That's connected up with a potential divider into a circuit that you can change the potential difference from 0 right the way up until the LED lights. And it's a nice experiment. So they need to find the point when, or the potential difference, so that the LED just lights up. Like, we're looking for as few photons as possible coming out of it. And what's quite nice is you get reasonable measurements, 2.4, 2.5 volts, or whatever it might be, and you plot that against its 1/1 wavelength. You get a lovely straight line graph. I've never had this not work, but it allows you to calculate Planck's constant at 6.10^-34. And I like it because it gives them an appreciation of, we can do something right in front of you that measures this number that is stupidly small. And we can get it within quite a high degree of accuracy. Like, within the lab and however many people are doing it, you usually get a variance of 5-10%. So it's a nice one.
Yeah, it is nice. The variant I saw, Dan, I don't know, maybe you can know, was that they had a sort of a black plastic tube to hold over the LED, because they said when it comes on, it's that threshold, the accuracy of your experiment depends on it being just the point at which it turns on. So do you sort of black out the room or do you use a black tube or something like that?
I do both. So we start off with the room is fully lighting and you have to set your circuit up. It's quite a nice one as well. I don't usually give them the circuit diagram. I explain what the LED looks like and the array because it's a specialist bit. But after that, I say you need something to set it up. So we spend a bit of time at the start talking about what the circuit should look like and why we use a potential divider and not just variable resistor and all the rest. But once it's set up and everyone's ready to take results, the blinds are down, the lights are off, and they've got those black cardboard tubes just to make it as easy as possible for them to see that light coming on.
I've never used black cardboard tubes. I will take that on board for that. Something someone told me, I can't remember, I think it might have been on the podcast when talking to someone offline, that someone told me they use a infrared LED and they look at it through the mobile phone.
Oh, I never thought of that.
To give them one more data point. I think that's brilliant.
Yes,
I wonder how accurate that would be.
Yes.
Well, we'll have to find out. I tried to get the wavelengths of my LEDs from the manufacturer and couldn't, so I just reverse engineered it and calculated using Planck constant the wavelength of the LEDs, and amazingly we get perfect results.
Yeah, who'd have thought? It comes out perfect every time.
Yeah. The lighting in the lab I teach is so bad, I don't need to do anything about the lighting. But if I use the black tubes now, it might ruin my results because they'll be able to see it come on sooner.
It was one thing actually I really relished and took away as a takeaway message from teaching biology was that every biology teacher will tell you that in the biology practice you just have to cheat. If it doesn't work, cheat. Always cheat.
I've taught a lot of biology over the years. You cheat on many things. They dose up water with carbon, don't they, so that photosynthesis works better, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember the visking tubing? That was the other one. You have a like some powdered glucose in your pocket. It's like being like an Australian cricketer. You sort of just reach into your pocket, sprinkle bits of it in when you're handling the tubing. So there we go. Look, glucose. Look, who'd have thought? There we go. You know.
I used to have a little bit of glucose in the pipette that I then went in to get I dosed that up.
It's true. It's like Jonathan Creek, isn't it? You just some magic trick. Oh, I think what happened there was the pipette was loaded with glucose. Yeah, love it.
Anyway, it's not the biology teaching podcast.
No, absolutely. Oh, but it's a good message to take. If at first you don't succeed, cheat.
Well, on that note... Well, thank you for your practical memoriam, Dan. I do like that practical. Really reliable.
See, now that I've had time to think, I've got two or three more.
Okay, well, do another one.
So I like to start... So usually when they just come into A-level, you can work at GCSE as well, as a kind of introduction to how science works, I give them a tennis ball and a meter rule, and I say, I'd like you to time how long it takes for the tennis ball to hit the ground, and just let them go. I say, you've got 5, 10 minutes, however long they need, and I expect all your results to be accurate. And then I stroll around and have a look, see what they're doing. Some will be just dropping from mid-air and trying to time the length of drops somewhere on the ground. Some are dropping onto chairs and standing on tables because they think they need to. And then we stop and I say, right, you've all done exactly the same experiment, same meter rules, same tennis balls. You should all have exactly the same time. And no doubt that we're widely varying. They go from half a second to, I think someone had 5 seconds once. I don't know what they were doing. And then we stop and we say, right, okay, something's going wrong here. What's the problem in this experiment? And then it turns out that it's them. So they need to change how they're doing it and think carefully about actually what is 1 meter, how do I measure 1 meter, when has it stopped? So we talk about being at eye level, making sure the meter rule is vertical, dropping it so someone's on the floor. Do we measure from the top of the ball, the bottom of the ball and all this? And it's just a nice way to actually get them to think about, rather than I just need to time this so we can get done and move on to doing something important. To actually, no, this is important, how I'm taking these readings and what I'm looking to do here is something that I need to think about in every experiment. And I usually find that gets rid of the problems later in the year of not being eye level and meter rules being wonky and silly things like that. So I quite like that one. It's an easy one, but it's a quick win.
I love that one. I love that sort of experiment. I've mentioned before, like giving them resistors to measure and that sort of thing. But that's so simple, and yeah, it's a brilliant when you stop them and say, yeah, 5 seconds, 0.1 seconds is brilliant.
Yeah, and it really does highlight to them that actually this is an answer, and then you can work out, you can calculate, okay, this is how long it should take, and we're all wildly off. And then if you work with later years, so year 12, year 13, or 17 to 18 year olds, you can then introduce uncertainty with it as well. So we could say, okay, well, what's our range of uncertainty within the class, and what's your percentage uncertainty compared to the actual value, and so on. So, yeah, is it a scope in there for taking it a long way on?
So just to check, you would do that with lower sixth, we'd say, so 16-year-olds in their first year of last year.
Or, depending on my year 10 or year 11s, if I felt that they needed a bit of a shake-up about how they do experiments, then I'd take a double lesson, or probably even just a single lesson, and get them to do that.
That would be freshman and sophomore in America, wouldn't it?
If you say
it'll
so.
Work with any year.
Oh, yeah, it does. And there are similar things you could do then with year sevens. Like you said, you can just get them to measure something with a ruler. And you find that they can't use it.
No, it's really nice, isn't it? It is just challenging. I do like when you meet classes, and at this stage of the year, when you're talking to them, you're talking about what physics is. And I often say that physics is about asking very, very simple questions that have very, very complicated answers a lot of the time. And they seem like really simple questions, but actually they're really, really deep. And you could introduce this idea of looking at things that you thought were simple in a new way and revealing hidden complexities. And it's quite a nice way of doing that too. So love it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Yes, thank you for that. Now, we've probably talked long enough. I should remind our dear listener that we are looking for ideas on how you teach ionizing radiation. If you can tweet them to us at PhysicsDP with the hashtag TPTPIR, that would be great. Anything about how you introduce the sources, their dangers, storing nuclear waste, their penetration power, anything like that, we'd love to hear from you. What are the other ways of contacting the podcast, Robin?
So you can contact us on Twitter at PhysicsTP. You can contact us on Instagram at Physics_teaching_podcast. Contact us via the website, of course, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com. There's a contact form on pretty much every page on the website, I believe. And of course, we have our email address as well, don't we, Thomas?
contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com. Yes, and whilst you're on the website, you can maybe go to the shop and buy a lovely T-shirt. Dan had a very good idea for the next T-shirt. I was wondering, actually, if any of our listeners have an artistic bent and wanted to design a couple of nuggets T-shirt. I really liked the couple of nuggets quote. So couple of nuggets T-shirt. I just have no artistic talent. I've tried. I just can't do it. So a couple of nuggets T-shirt. If anyone wants to design that and tweet it at us, it would be brilliant. So, yes, go to the shop. You can donate to help us fund the cost of running the podcast. That would be great. Buy a T-shirt. And reminder, vacuum cleaners are back, available to order. We've had one order already, and I'll be shipping them at the end of October. So that about wraps it up, chaps. Thank you very much for coming on, Dan. We'll have to get you on again down the line.
Oh, love to. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's been great, Dan. Thanks ever so much. And it's really lovely to... I think that's our first teacher from the Republic of Ireland, I think, Thomas. So that's our first... that's a new country to add to our Physics Teaching Podcast Wall of Fame.
So thank you very much, chaps. And we'll speak to you next week.
Take care, Thomas.
Cheers.
Thanks.
You have been listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast. Special thanks this week to Dan Toomey. And thanks to Patrick Caplow for popping in. Please share your ideas about teaching ionizing radiation. Tweet at us with the hashtag TPTPIR. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.